Should I just start rapping now?
If you want to.
Yeah, make my music louder. I'm gonna drop a verse. I got 16 bars for you, son.
You will drop no such thing.
No, I'm not gonna do that. What's up, guys? Welcome to an all-new edition of What Are Your Thoughts? America's favorite investing live stream. My name is Downtown Josh Brown. I am here with my co-host, Mr. Michael Batnick, as usual. Michael, say hello.
Hello, hello.
If you are new to the show, we talk about the biggest and most consequential topics happening in the market and the economy circa right this second. We've been doing this show or version of this show all the way back to 2019. Did you know that, Mike? 2019 or 2018, it could be.
Yeah. Wow.
It's quite a run, and we absolutely love doing it. And we're so happy to see everybody who's here live in the chat. Sodak Jason giving a shout out to Duncan. That's right. Duncan is back and behind the scenes. Cliff Peebles, I'm jealous of your hair, Josh. Well, tough luck, because it's only going to get better from here. I had my fourth consecutive monthly PRP treatment, coincidentally, today. And it's really not, because of the life cycle of hair, it's really not until month 8 that you see the full results. Look at the results that I'm already showing, having just begun in March, or in April. It's like a scientific miracle happening here.
Are they asking you for testimonials?
There's going to be pictures of me on the wall.
You're going to be the face, nay, the hair of PSP or whatever the hell
anyway,
it's called.
Anyway, shout out to Dr. Scheinblum. He is absolutely
a Jewish doctor for a change.
Can you believe it? Wow. All right. Guys, we have a sponsor tonight. It's Janice Henderson.
That's right, Josh.
Go ahead, take it.
At Janice Henderson Investors, we believe working together is the way to work better. So do I. Like combining your portfolio plans and our in-depth strategy, your valued assets and our valuable insights, your mission and our vision, always working in perfect harmony to find the right investment opportunities. Janice Henderson Investors, investing in a brighter future together.
All right. Only two stumbles in the whole ad read. That was pretty good. Janice Henderson. No, not the worst I've ever heard. Definitely not the best. JaniceHenderson.com for more information. And thank you so much, guys, for sponsoring the show. We appreciate you.
You know the problem, my reading skills are starting to atrophy. I'm an audiobook guy now, as you know.
I know. You have given up reading. All right, SpaceX. I don't have a ton to say on this. What I want to say is this. We were part of this wave of market commentators in the run-up to the SpaceX IPO who were sharing these tables, these charts, these statistics about how the typical IPO, almost no matter how hot it is not going to be able to hold its pop. Within the first year, there's going to be a big pullback. Google is the counterexample. Google Google opened up and never, ever looked back, right? But that's Google, okay? That's like
a long time ago.
It's a very long time ago, and B, it's I'm not going to say one in a million, but close enough. So we were part of this, like just saying, all right, everybody's excited. It's Elon. It's rockets. It's time travel. Whatever he's saying he's going to do. But number one, there's going to be a ton of stock hitting the market in short order, whether the ETFs are buying it or not. It doesn't matter. And number two, look at every other hot deal. There's been a window with a better opportunity. And this one round-tripped faster than I thought. I don't even know if we bothered making a chart. But suffice to say, the stock was priced at 135, ran to 217. It's back at 136 as of today's close. And it's less than 30 days later. What are your thoughts?
This went exactly how we thought it was going to go, and I'm not taking credit for that. I don't know that there was.
No.
Here's why. I don't know that there was a single market commentator who thought it would go any other way. It was pretty much universal. Maybe there was a bull or two, but I think everybody talking to individual investors had the same advice. Maybe there will be a very short-term pop, and if that's your plan, you want to buy it and sell it the same day because you want to gamble. All right, fine. But if you're trying to buy it and hold it as an investment, wait. I'm pretty sure that was like the universal advice.
Who the f*** bought this at 217? If you had to guess. Who's the top? It's not a hedge fund. There's no way. It's not a mutual. I don't think it's a mutual fund.
That's such a great question.
And it wasn't day one. The stock rallied for 5 days.
Did it? Okay. I think it was like 3 days.
Let's see. Nope. It went up and then went up. It topped, and that was it.
It topped on the third day.
The third day. Okay, fine.
But that's such a good question. We'll never know. I have no idea.
No, but I'm just trying to.
Here's the answer.
Nobody will ever really know, but like just conceptually.
No, here's the answer.
Who is the buyer?
I'll tell you. It's people that bought at 217 because they wanted to sell at 230. I don't think anybody thought that they would buy it at 217.
And then are they still in it?
No. No, I mean, I don't think so.
It's down 80 points.
No.
80 points.
The volume in the first couple of days, the turnover and the number of shares was, I'm making this up, 8 shares, like 8x turnover for the number of shares. So I think it was short-term traders. Nobody bought it at 217 and is still holding because they think it's going to go back to 3.
We have some guesses in the chat. Can I share them with you?
Sure, go ahead.
Elon fanboys. Fine. Kathy Wood. So I know she did an open market buy, but she also owns it from prior to it going public.
I knew she bought it on the day of the IPO. I don't know if she got allocated at 135. I don't know how that works with an ETF.
Lopez is saying All In was pumping it. I disagree. Those guys own it from pennies. They're not telling you to buy it from them. They're just excited. And if I were them, I'd be excited too. Those guys are friends with Elon. Like they're not. They didn't get it at 135 on the IPO. They got it at like 10.
How about this? I would wager that of the shares that were bought above $200, I would guess 80% of those people are out.
Oh, Jackman79 makes a good point. Funds for the leveraged ETFs. I guess like if people were trading the leveraged ETF like within 24 hours, it's got to own stock if it's got demand.
So
for the-
this is a show with a host and a co-host, and when I talk, you have to respond to me. We're doing a show together.
Yeah.
So
well,
let me say my point one more time because you didn't hear because you were in the comments. I would guess that 80% of the people that bought above 200 have sold. I don't think it's like bag holders that are the dumbest idiots in the world.
No, I agree with you.
I think most people are out.
No, I'm with you on that. I don't think the people sitting in the stock right now at 136 are the people that bought it over 200.
No,
because I think a lot of gambling took place above 200.
Yeah, and they're done.
And the gamblers are ostensibly they have an out, and that's part of the selling. All right. Either way, very instructive. Doesn't mean that Anthropic or OpenAI, when those come public, or Anduril for that matter, or Databricks, or any of the deals that people are excited about, does not mean that those will do exactly what this did. But I think people should have in the back of their head, this can happen.
Great learning experience. And a lot of them look like this. Really, we weren't heroes for calling this out. A lot do look like this. And I'm very curious to see where it finds the floor, because 136 is not so bad. This is where it IPO'd at 150. This is nothing. It could go to 100. I'm not suggesting that it will, but who knows? We'll see.
All right. So Michael does not want to take any credit for having cautioned people. I do. So I will take that credit.
No. That part makes me feel good. If you thought about buying SpaceX and you were convinced by Josh and I not to, I feel good about that. I'm just saying that was not a heroic warning. Everybody gave that warning.
Would you buy this stock now at the IPO price?
I'd feel a lot more comfortable doing it. Like, I don't know. I don't know where the bottom is. It closed an all-time low today after 11 trading days. I have no interest in buying the stock today. But if you're buying it here and you want to put it away for 5 years, okay.
The little boys in my town are all texting me, like my daughter's friends. They're like, now? they want to buy it so bad.
Listen, it's been trading for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
I have no idea where this thing is going to settle out, but not for me.
So that's a good point. 3 weeks. What this process is called, what they refer to this on the street, this is called seasoning.
Seasoning.
The stock is being seasoned.
Like your hair.
Like very much like my hair. So, all right. Next thing. I actually think this is the biggest story of the last week. Apple versus OpenAI is the big one to me. I think that this lawsuit, Apple sued OpenAI. I'm going to explain it in 2 seconds. But I just want to say why we're even talking about this. This the outcome of this, or not even the outcome, but the process of how this lawsuit runs its way through the courts, literally has the ability to shape the next 5 years in tech. That's how important I think this is, and I'm gonna explain why. Apple is saying that OpenAI stole trade secrets. Number one, there are 400 former Apple employees now working at OpenAI. Not an accident, very deliberate. OpenAI understands the thing that I have been telling you guys for a long time, which is that he who owns the device decides how the end user is going to interact with a given product and is going to share in the revenue almost regardless of who wins. And that is the position that Apple is in. It's an installed base of 2.5 billion devices around the world. And my investment thesis is that Apple is going to own the consumer relationship with AI. Whatever LLM you want to use doesn't make a difference. You're going to access it through iOS and Apple's going to get paid and knock yourself out. You could use any of them that you want. That's just how this is going to go. It's no different from a lot of other things we've seen before this. OpenAI knows that. I'm not a genius. Sam Altman hired Johnny Ive, bought Johnny Ive's design studio to create a physical product that could do an end run around Apple. They want to do a pendant, like a necklace that sits at your chest and you talk to. And they want to do a desktop device, some sort of a box or something that's got speakers, perhaps a camera that you can interact with without looking at your phone. This is priority one at Meta. This is what the Ray-Bans are all about. Snap with the spectacles. Alphabet with, they tried it with Google Glass. We'll see what they do next. Everybody wants to figure out a way to provide AI without paying the toll at Apple. Okay, that's what's going on. So Apple is saying that OpenAI is just openly stealing trade secrets that have to do with its hardware and the way it builds products, et cetera, so that they could build their own.
What's their Apple's, case?
Their case is they have a ringleader, Tang Yu Tan, OpenAI's chief hardware officer, who worked at Apple for 24 years. He was the former VP of iPhone and Apple Watch product design. Apple says this guy directed job candidates to bring actual Apple parts, CAD files, that's computer-assisted design, and prototypes to OpenAI interviews for, quote, show and tell. I mean, this is like hardcore industrial espionage. They say another guy, Cheng Liu, ex-Apple engineer, allegedly exploited an authentication bug to access Apple's network storage from a former colleague's Apple laptop. They have text messages in the filing. Lol, I found out I can access the network storage. So funny. And quote, I still have another computer. They say OpenAI was coaching departing employees from Apple to avoid the dreaded walkout, which is where Apple physically walks you out after your 2-week notice is up. So they'd have more time to extract data. And employees were allegedly told to notify OpenAI ASAP and avoid signing anything at an Apple exit interview. Now, I don't know Sam Altman personally, but I could kind of look at his face and absolutely picture him directing this kind of activity. I don't know why. Maybe that's not fair. What are your thoughts?
How long does it take for something like this to play out, to work its way through the courts? Is this going to be going on for 3 years?
I'm so glad you asked. It almost doesn't matter. The thing that's going to happen is discovery. Discovery is this process by which the court directs both parties to reproduce documents and all sorts of things that can be used during the course of the trial. And if any of this is true, discovery is going to kill these guys. So any trade secret suit, now OpenAI's internal communications will be laid bare. Their own product roadmaps will be exposed, their own hiring practices. And this is at a moment where OpenAI is trying to create and project stability in the eyes of Wall Street and to show itself as not a startup that literally hasn't been operating for more than 3 years, but to really show itself as like this big, stable, trustworthy technology giant, but this is going to work in the opposite direction.
Zero
to reputational risk. Yeah, it's a really, really big deal.
0 to 100% chance of certainty. What would you say the odds are of that in 3 years from now? We're all, or many of us, are using a device that's powered by OpenAI, a physical device. Will they be successful?
I would say very slim. And now I would say, think about this as a worst case scenario for OpenAI, because now not only can they not move forward in building physical products without the threat of anything they build, Apple immediately suing them, now they have to be distracted by this whole thing where the people they hired could be pulled into depositions, right? Or could be asked for sworn affidavits, or could be scared away from wanting to share their own internal knowledge because they might end up sharing something that they weren't supposed to have retained from their time at Apple.
I do
wonder
what Apple—
I actually think this is extremely detrimental to OpenAI's hardware story.
So I wonder what Apple's motivation is for doing this. Like, why are they doing this? Why bother?
Because they actually said the phrase rotten to the core to describe the way OpenAI is going about its hardware ambitions, just like trying to deliberately rip off Apple. Now, 4 or 5 years go by, the court might find, after multiple objections and delays and all sorts of tactics, that Apple is wrong. It almost doesn't matter. Apple is basically saying, oh, no, you don't. You're not hiring 400 of our people, telling people to bring their laptops, telling people to share files. No chance. We're not letting you get away with it. So now, what makes this really fascinating is that Apple, on a parallel track, fell out of love with the idea of working with ChatGPT. There was a time where it looked like ChatGPT was going to be the default AI technology behind its own apps.
Well, so this is the other angle that I was asking you about. Do you think they're actually afraid of the hardware competition, which seems extremely far-fetched, or is this more they want to get closer into bed with Claude for whatever reasons?
Not Claude, Gemini. Apple and Google have one of the best relationships among the tech giants, like one of the most complementary relationships that exists. I don't even know what would be a good comparison.
Doesn't Google pay $20 billion a year to be the default browser?
Google has been the default browser and search engine inside of the iOS environment. So in all of the Apple apps, Google has, it was default search, not browser, browser, still Safari, which is Apple's, but default search. And they paid a lot of money for that. And these two companies have worked very well together, and now they're working together again. OpenAI was kicked out, and their renewed push to create agentic Siri and other AI stuff within their phone is now being powered by Gemini. So this is like OpenAI not only started out in pole position to be the AI solution for Apple users. They got kicked out of there. Now they're going to work on a hardware product that they're already being sued for before it even comes out. This is, I think, a really, really big story, and the ramifications of what's going on are going to come back to haunt a lot of the players in this space over the next couple of years.
All right. Well, we are still on topic 1A. We have 43 more pages left to go, and we are 20 minutes into the show. All so right. Let's keep moving.
IBM blew up today, the worst day for IBM ever. Some people said back to 1961.
Ever.
I'm going to say ever.
Well, fine, 61. Who cares?
Well, in dollar terms, for sure, the worst day ever. Put the chart up. The stock lost 25% of its market cap today. That is $67 billion in lost market cap over a revenue miss of $660 million. Does that sound disproportionate to you?
So is that 100x market cap? Let me ask you this. Why do companies pre-announce the way that they did? Like, why do they do this? Their earnings report is in a week or two. Why get ahead of this? What's the benefit?
So that they don't have a class action lawsuit, which they will anyway.
Why would they have a class action lawsuit? They can't just wait 10 days?
Wait 10 days and then blow up? People will say, why didn't you give us any guidance? Why didn't you warn suing you? They're going to get sued either way. This is just the culture. There'll be a class action for anytime a blue chip stock loses 25% a day, there's going to be a class action lawsuit. But I think by coming out with guidance, I guess the theory is next week they'll do the actual call and the bad news is already out, so they can focus more on like telling the sell side how they're addressing some of the issues.
All right, well,
the bad news is I don't think they really – there's much that they can actually do, which we'll talk about in a second.
I thought that the reaction in some of the stock prices was moderately interesting today. So a lot of the AI infrastructure names that have been under pressure since Samsung topped a couple of weeks ago, I guess you could have expected them to be up 8 to 10% on the news and software to get killed. That didn't really happen. Like actually, software put in a really, really nice bullish candle today. And the names that you thought would benefit, with the exception of the cyber names, which they mentioned, like I thought the market's reaction was interesting.
The stocks that were hit negatively on this news have shrunk in terms of their importance to the IGV. This is the most important thing. ServiceNow had had a tough day.
Not really.
Workday had a tough day. They didn't get killed.
No, they opened up down 9 or 10%, and Workday was down 3.5% on the day.
Okay, but
my
point is, if this were 6 months ago,
down 15.
The software sector would have been negative. The IGV was green in the middle of the day.
IGV was bright green, and my point is, I think that it will take a lot, and not from IBM. I think you're going to have to hear from Salesforce or one of these companies directly, which you might. I mean, we have earnings season in a couple of weeks.
I want to make a different point. The point I want to make is that the order of things inside of the IGV has changed significantly. The cybersecurity stocks are so much bigger now than they were 6 months ago relative to the enterprise SaaS stocks.
So Oracle has shrank big time.
Well, like ServiceNow, Workday, Salesforce, these were much bigger market caps and much more important to the IGV. And now CrowdStrike and Palantir and Palo Alto Networks and Fortinet are way more important than they were. So there are Cloudflare. Like these are companies where the share prices went up based on what. All right, so the CEO is Arvind Krishna, and these.
Wait, hang on. Back to your point. Do you know what the biggest name in IGV is
today? Isn't it Microsoft still?
How is this possible? Palo Alto Network is number one.
Yeah.
Palantir is two, and Microsoft is three. It's obviously not exactly cap weighted. That's interesting.
It's not perfectly cap weighted, I guess.
All right, go on.
I think it's a function of how much of their business is derived from software.
Okay, that makes sense.
Is how they figure that out.
That makes sense.
So look, they said revenue would be 17.2%, which is up 1%, which obviously you can't do. Infrastructure revenue down 7%. GAAP earnings down 2%. Blah, 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 blah. These are some of the statements that he made. He filed, it's an 8K. This is from a letter filed with the SEC. Quote, in the first few weeks of June, we saw clients shift their quarterly CapEx towards servers, storage, and memory purchases to secure supply-constrained infrastructure ahead of expected price increases. Basically, they're saying deals didn't close because their customers were focused on buying other things. And one of those things is obviously hardware, and the other one is cybersecurity. So we're going to show some of these charts because the market actually reacted the way it should have. Let's do Dell. This is what IBM's customers are spending their money on. Let's do CrowdStrike. New record high. This stock just split 4 for 1. If it hadn't split, it'd be $800 stock right now. Look at it. This was 350 not long ago. Palo Alto, PANW, stock ripped today. So basically, chart off, IBM's customers are securing compute, spending the related increase on cybersecurity for all these workloads that are now going to be AI workloads, and of course, buying more servers. And buying more CPUs and buying more GPUs and buying more memory, anything but what IBM sells. And IBM, by virtue of being the first of the tech companies to pre-announce a weak quarter, I think just said the quiet part out loud.
Which is?
Enterprise SaaS spending is not a priority for the enterprise, for corporations. And it's probably not going to be for the rest of the summer. And I honestly think that this was a warning shot that investors need to pay attention to. What do you think?
I agree. By the way, we own
what we're all about here.
But I'm surprised at the reaction from a Salesforce, which probably opened down 8% and closed moderately red. It was down 2% today. I would have thought that this would be like, to your point, if this was a few months ago, Salesforce would be down 16% in concert.
These stocks were already, so all right, this is a good point that you raise. IBM started the day within 5 or 10% of an all-time high.
It's interesting that the market got it so wrong.
The stocks that you talk about were already negative 30%.
Yeah.
So that's an explanation.
Way more. But it's interesting that the market, listen, the market's not all-knowing and all-seeing, but it usually doesn't get surprised this bad. So my IBM, the stock looked okay. It, like you said, it was right near its highs, and down 25% for a $290 billion stock is remarkable.
IBM had a very bad day one day last week. Do you know why?
I don't.
Starbucks told Wall Street that they are actively working on their own AI products. And Wall Street interpreted that as Microsoft and IBM, which are big Starbucks vendors, are going to be in trouble.
Starbucks is building a data center?
Wow. Starbucks is, no. Starbucks is building software to help operate what some of these giant software companies typically sell them. Okay. So this is the vibes. I got to tell you, I can't imagine it being an IBM-only issue. Can you?
No. All right, let's talk about this. Everyone says, not everyone, a lot of people are mentioning the B word. Many people are saying, that's the correct vernacular, thank you, that we're in a bubble. And how do you not see it? Now, I suppose when they talk about the bubble, they are talking about a very specific, now there are some people that think everything's a bubble, forget those people. There are some people that think that memory stocks are in a bubble, but maybe focus on the fact that these earnings are unsustainable, and let's just say that we're in an earnings bubble, okay? Chartkin Matt did a thing where he overlaid the forward EPS of the S&P 500 versus the actual EPS. In other words, how accurate are analyst expectations for the forward 12-month earnings per share of the S&P 500?
That's brilliant.
And it turns out, they're pretty good at their job. All right? So the light blue line, which is the part that people say this is not sustainable, there's no way that this is, maybe it'll happen over the next 12 months, but people doubt the, I don't know if I'm using the word right here, the efficacy of these earnings over the next 36 months. But over the next 12 months, they're probably going to happen. Here's why. Next chart. They're within 5% of each other 67% of the time. The only time where they meaningfully diverge to the downside, where analyst estimates are way off, obviously, is when you get a recession, which is impossible to foresee, obviously. So absent a recession, we are likely going to get the earnings that people are estimating.
All right, put the first chart back up. What do you notice? So the gray shaded areas are recessions, obviously. What do you notice happens right at the start of those recessions?
Why don't you just tell me, Sherlock Holmes?
Happened all three times. The street is almost always right, except at major economic turning points, and they go right off the cliff. They keep raising estimates long after the companies start missing and disappointing.
Great observation.
Right. Well, I mean, to me, so the real question is, like, could something big enough happen where the street gets the memo too late once again and actual results start to disappoint while their estimates remain high?
Of course.
And, well, so what is that thing? Because I have an opinion.
I don't think it's going to be what everyone thinks it is. Where
what is the thing that you think everyone thinks?
Hyperscalers pulling back.
No, I have a new nightmare.
Lower the volume so people think.
I'm ready to unlock a new nightmare.
This is very, very serious.
Okay. a seismic shift in the pricing of AI due to more efficient models that rely on less token use and less memory. What do you mean, nah? Why not?
Because with every step function increase in the efficiency and whatever these models are able to do, people are spending way more, not less. So this idea that all of a sudden there's going to be some seismic breakthrough that pulls the cost down seems highly unlikely. I'm not a scientist, but
there already has been a breakthrough. It's the adoption of it that's still in question. But
it is only increasing the overall spend. The drop.
I think it's increasing the overall use
and spend.
But what I'm describing is different. What I'm describing is an open weight model catches fire. We've seen this happen before. Linux is a great example. Everybody thought they were married to Microsoft for life, and all of a sudden Linux came along, and a lot of developers just moved over to that because it was more efficient to build things.
Fine,
if they decide that they're going to use these open weight models for 95% of the workflows and then only send the most critical 5% to the more expensive frontier models like LLM and Anthropic, if they decide, hey, you know what? We actually don't need the best model. We just need something that we can repeatedly do
at a
fifth of the cost. But that changes all of a sudden the earnings expectations that are in this chart.
Plus 1,800 of that happening. Could happen. It's a long shot.
Imagine if it does.
I will kiss your feet.
No, I don't want it to happen.
If that happens, I will regrow my hair. How about that?
Well, isn't that the history of tech that eventually cheaper, more efficient ways of doing things come along and that puts pressure on pricing? Isn't that what literally always happens?
Yes, and I am out of my lane here, but these are like very expensive models to train. Now, I don't know how much DeepSeek raised or whatever, but like that somebody's just going to spin this up. It seems very far-fetched. All right, let's keep going.
Okay, I think it sort of already exists, and it's too early. Nobody can know definitively. We'll leave it at that.
All right, but the other thing is, there's not a stock market bubble. And let me make my case. Duality Research has a chart that shows the year-over-year price change and the year-over-year EPS change in semiconductor stocks. And the spread is crashing because, he says, investors are clearly pricing in a peak in earnings growth. That's why. Investors are not overly optimistic. Look at this spread. It is at an all-time low. So the year-over-year EPS change is so far outpacing the year-over-year price change for reasons that I think are probably rational. Not probably rational. People are estimating that this is not going to go on forever. Otherwise, the spread would not be crashing to this extent. Would you agree?
I completely agree. That is what this chart is showing, lack of belief.
Correct.
That this has any more legs out past 27. Nobody thinks so.
We could skip the next chart because it's not really relevant to this conversation. We're already going way late. Go to the chart from Mike Sicardi. If this were a stock market bubble, this chart would not look like this. And here's what we're looking at. This is from Paulson, Jim Paulson. The S&P 500 old era relative stock price index. So we're looking at a market cap weighted index of the old era stocks. That is the remaining 9 sectors, excluding information technology and communication sectors, and they're breaking out.
I feel like they're trying to say halo, but not pay me by saying old era. Get the f*** out of here. Just say the halo stocks are breaking out.
All right, a few more charts. Let's keep it moving. This is like sort of a tangent to my overall point. I just thought this chart was super interesting and I wanted to share it with the audience. So Bespoke shares that the second quarter was the first time since at least 1990 that only one of the major S&P 500 sectors outperformed the index. How nuts is that? Everything's working.
Yeah. Oh, it's still shocking the degree to which this is the case.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then lastly, you say, all right, SK Hynix was up 27% today. Am I going to say that like there's not areas of speculation? Of course there are, always. But does this look like a bubble? Throw up the DGEN Dow. Look at this piece of shit. Names like Rigatoni. We don't talk about these names anymore. Iran, Ionic, or IONQ, whatever it's called. These names are just stuck in the mud while the index is at an all-time high.
I very notably said a healthy bull market takes out its own trash. That is exactly what's happened. I love that chart that you just put up. I love that this market is not being led by companies without earnings, companies that are selling people, you know, dreams.
Nonsense. And let me do you one last one. This is from Vanda Research, okay? They show the single stock net weekly buying is at its lowest since COVID. Now, we're about to transition into the SK Hynix debut because there are a lot of people that have moved away from single stocks and into levered single stocks in the ETFs, okay? So maybe that's part of what's happening here. But there's no doubt that retail, that's a fact. They are trading and speculating way less overall than they have been in the recent past, like in a serious way. Look at that chart.
I see what's on the chart.
So don't you listen.
Can I add, what if we blended this though with single stock ETFs?
So I just said that. There are certainly a lot of people that are trading single stock ETFs. Like obviously we're about to get into it. Of course there. We've been all over this. But I really do think that there's different pockets. There's different types of speculators. The single stock buying has slowed down dramatically. And a lot of it shifted to the ETF, but not all of it.
I agree. And I just think that person that liked to speculate in individual stocks, they're still out there. There are less of them right at the moment. But those other people haven't gone away. They're doing prediction markets. They're doing options. They're doing levered ETFs. They're doing single stock ETFs. They're still around. You make this point all the time. They're never leaving. They're just playing different games. It's like walk into the casino, look at the backgammon table. Nobody's sitting there. What do you conclude? They're sleeping? No. They're at a different table playing a different game.
So let's get to that table. What game are they playing?
Pick one.
No,
there's more games.
No,
there's more games now than ever.
That was an alley-oop, sir. You're up next.
Well, we're going to do this SK Hynix thing very quickly because I know literally nothing about it. I'm not even interested in it. I don't even really care. But I would point out, I think it was $29 billion worth of stock they were able to sell to Wall Street investors. It's not really a traditional IPO.
It's an ADR.
This company was already trading without a problem in Korea. And now they wanted to give U.S. investors, quote unquote, access to SK Hynix on a U.S. exchange. And voila! Yeah. And of course, it's already one of the most volatile stocks I've ever seen in my life, which is pretty much, talk about seasoning. So this thing probably needs a month or two before anybody could look at it and figure out what the hell is going on. But one thing U.S. investors should be aware of, this is the tail, not the dog. The dog trades in South Korea, in Seoul. This stock will open with huge gaps up and huge gaps down based on what happens 14 hours earlier in Asia every night. This may not be your cup of tea, I guess would be the point I'd make. There have been many.
It's my cup of green tea. Get it?
Many successful, ADRs of international companies. I prefer the ones in the Western Hemisphere where they sort of open up for trading and close around the same time as the U.S. market. Mercado Libre would be my example of that. Shopify in Canada. I don't really love the idea that you wake up to a surprise every single day of the week because you buy something where the primary trading is taking place in Asia. So that's my comment on SK Hynix. I hope it goes to the moon. I hope everybody makes a ton of money.
It was up 28%.
Yeah, but what did it go down in the 2 days since it came public? It's a roller coaster. You could wake up. This stock could be up or down 20% on any given day is, I guess, the point that I'm trying to make. More volatile than Western Digital, more volatile than Micron. Fair point.
Yep. So you're not buying the 2X levered version of it?
Staying out.
All right, let's talk about banks. I listened to three calls today. I listened to Jamie Dimon and Jeremy at...
That's the only one I do.
At JP Morgan. And I listened to DJ David Solomon, as I always do. You know... And I listened to Bank of America. Two things. All right, so they all smashed, like across the board.
They better.
Business is good. Jamie Dimon was asked about return of capital to shareholders. He's like, you know, I hate that term. I view it as like we have investing opportunities and that's another investment just like anything else. And our bogey is 17%. If we can't do that, yeah, maybe we'll buy back stock. And they asked David Solomon, he was like, we love returning capital to shareholders. Like there's the dichotomy between the two was very interesting. Really very little mention of private credit. Not once on the JP Morgan call, just didn't really come up. But I thought that was notable. And anyway, the banks are kicking ass.
Private credit's been super quiet. That's such a great point. Maybe it wasn't the last earnings quarter or maybe it was the one before, but that one of these earnings quarters, every Q&A started with one or two questions about private credit risk.
So
that's a really good point.
Goldman raised $31 billion in private credit this quarter.
Yeah. This was my takeaway. The theme across all of these reports, very simple.
Trading.
We're in a bull market. These are the companies that benefit the most from bull markets historically, and the system is working as it's supposed to. Any business that's in any way connected to equities is absolutely on fire. Mm-hmm. Prime brokerage, margin lending, equity finance, IPOs, follow-on offerings and secondaries, preferred stock issuance, market making,
all of it.
Intermediation, any business that touches equities is just going absolutely crazy. And Jamie said, quote, the markets are booming right now. It's getting as close to as good as it gets. We just don't know how long it's going to last.
He was asked if this is as good as it gets, and that's what he said.
He said almost.
Yeah.
Give me the JP Morgan chart. Full disclosure, I own the stock. I've been long for over a decade. I never sell it. What an unbelievable run the stock's been on for all that time. But even this year, like this thing is now up meaningfully on the year and starting to move. This is almost a $1 trillion market cap bank.
They all said the same thing. Consumers and small business from Jeremy. Consumers and small businesses continue to show resilience despite elevated gas prices and inflation with higher tax refunds and a solid labor market contributing to strong spend growth. Wells Fargo said the same thing. I didn't listen to that. Bank of America said the same thing. I thought this was interesting. Back to like the comment about the trading stuff. Jeremy was asked to unpack his comments because I think it wasn't just trading. Like there was record revenue in every segment. Like everything went well. And so he said, there's really not a lot behind my comment. It's essentially what you would get from asking any of the commercial AI models this question. The two stages. Okay. We had some major IPOs. We had some major index rebalancing. We had some very complicated dynamics in the Korean equity market. There's been a lot of activity in Asia. The clients have been extremely active. It's all the headlines basically that have driven the market. And then Jamie says, you guys can see most of this on a daily basis through the volumes of the New York Stock Exchange, the CME volumes, through hedge funds. It's not a secret. Margin loads, you could see a lot of this taking place during the course of a quarter.
Yeah. So look, there are offsets to this. In a declining market, you have volatility, and volatility creates a lot of trading opportunity. That's not what this is. This is not a very volatile market. This is a market that's a classic bull market. Almost every sector has huge winners. And a couple of things happen in bull markets, and this will always be the case. One of the things is you could sell a lot of stock, whether that's Google doing an $85 billion secondary share sale, or it's SpaceX doing a record IPO. In either case, JP Morgan is getting paid. Goldman Sachs is getting paid. So that's one of the things. The other thing is people who are long want to be more long.
More long, yeah. So they commented their derivative book was up massively. Yeah. So their equity trading was up.
Margin balances, prime brokerage. Like this is where all the money is. Two funny things with the analysts. Two different analysts asked about succession. Very notably, the head of banking, Marianne Lake, resigned from the firm during the course of the quarter, and Dimon elevated two people to co-president, Troy Rohrbaugh and Doug Petno. I think
it's the board does that, not just him. Like it's the board's
fine
decision.
Sure.
No, for real.
Not around him though. Anyway, they wanted to get a comment because she had been like the rumored successor for a very long. Her and Mary Erdos had been like the two rumored successors. And he just said, look, we said what our plans were. She chose not to work here rather than stay. No mystery. I thought they handled that well. He would not give a definitive answer on when he's leaving.
He said a couple years, minus a
couple,
yeah, plus
couple
minus
few
years.
Severals.
Yeah.
In a few severals, I might go. Last thing that was funny. Mike Mayo from Wells Fargo asked, why did you make an FX trader the president of community banking or consumer banking or whatever? And Jeremy Barnum said, actually, he's an options trader. I think that was a pretty good way to answer.
Yeah.
Last thing. Investment banking fees up 30%. That's not going to be every quarter from here on out. You should not extrapolate that. Equities revenue up 86% year over year. Again, there's not going to be a SpaceX every quarter from here on out. Asset and wealth management. Listen to this. 38% pre-tax margin on $6.9 billion of revenue. Revenue was up 19%. Assets under management were up 18%.
A lot of loans. John, throw up that chart, the black chart with the blue and green bars, please. The next one. It's like a few charts. There we go. Thank you. Great job. So the green is JP Morgan and the blue is Goldman, and this is equity trading. And pretty range bound for the last five quarters. And look at that explosion this quarter.
Yeah. So again, very traditional, classic bull market. And exactly what you would expect to happen is literally what's happening.
All right, Bank of America.
I didn't listen to this, so I'll let you take this one.
It's very banky stuff. It's like a lot of net interest stuff. It's not as exciting as the other two. But I pulled out two things. Look at the first chart. So they show the first half credit and debit year-over-year growth. And obviously there's gas. But
yeah,
look at entertainment and travel, dude. People are having a great time.
Yeah.
The dollar volume is up 13% for entertainment. Things are getting more expensive. But transaction numbers up 7%. That is super healthy. I mean, beyond healthy. That's robust.
To Goldman.
Wait, I have one more thing. Hold on.
Oh.
Asset quality at Bank of America. So I'm not sweeping under the rug the concerns about credit card debt and auto loans, but Bank of America is Main Street. Like this is literally the Bank of America. And the net charge-offs on the consumer side are 90 basis points. This is the overall. But there's nothing going on here.
Yeah.
There's nothing going on here. Provision for credit losses are down. The economy and the consumer are beyond healthy.
I wish there was something going on here. I would shout it from the rooftops. I would title a YouTube video, "The Consumer is Melting Down," and you motherfuckers would click on it. It's just not in the chart. I'm sorry that you have so many people in your lives telling you how horrible things are. It's just not true. They can't stay off an airplane for 5 minutes.
This was a great quote from David Solomon. So Goldman Sachs had a monster, monster quarter and a monster day for the stock. And this is Goldman. This is who Goldman is. He said, "The trust we have built with clients over decades continues to position Goldman Sachs at the center of the most strategic and consequential transactions. This includes acting as lead left bookrunner on the record-breaking IPO for SpaceX, an equity raise for Alphabet, as well as advising Dominion Energy's sale to NextEra Energy and Comcast spinoff of NBC Universal. Goldman is still the king."
If ever there were a Goldman market, we're
it's
in
this
it.
One. Yeah.
Yep. For sure.
All right. Wells Fargo.
What a great. Put up the stock chart, Goldman.
Monster.
One more time. My God. You want to fade it? Go ahead.
Right, so I just assumed that Wells and Citi said the same thing. And I'm very curious.
Wells is sort of boring.
I'm sure.
Citi had a negative reaction today, but I think that's just because the stock had run up so much.
Their wealth business is on fire. Speaking of that, we're going to hear from Morgan Stanley. I will listen to that. And then we're going to hear, obviously, the asset managers, BlackRock. I am going to follow those very closely over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, Citi has a big catalyst. Banamex, which is like a Mexican consumer bank, gigantic. They sold half of it to outside investors, and then they're going to do a full IPO of the rest of their stake at some point later this year. That should be a good catalyst. It'll quote unquote unlock shareholder value.
You know, Hold on. I have a strong place in my heart for Citi. I'm part of the franchise, part of the story. I was a temp there in 2010, watching compliance videos, doing my thing. So
yeah, they did mention you on the call today. So. All right. We were going to do a preview, but it's too much. We were going to do Morgan Stanley, BlackRock, and Schwab, but it's literally not enough time in the day. So we'll hold on to those for.
I thought we were going to skip the Texas thing. This is kind of there's like not a lot to say. I don't have a lot to say here. What do you think is a good story?
I want to say three things. I think it's fascinating. So welcome to Wall Street, the Texas Stock Exchange, just open for trade. You're about to laugh. That's what they're calling it, Wall Street, and it's Dallas, and it just opened for trading last week. My entire career was a consolidation of exchanges. The NYSE bought the American, NASDAQ bought, I think, the Philadelphia. Like there was a time where there were regional exchanges. They all got consolidated, and now we have the Texi.
Knowing nothing, I don't think this is going to work.
Oh, I guess we'll find out. Wall Street seems to think it's going to work. Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley are shifting thousands of jobs to Dallas. Put this picture up. This is the new building that's now under construction. This will be uptown in Dallas, and Morgan Stanley is in negotiations to put their name on top of it. This will house the Texi, the exchange itself.
Yeah, but they're not going to Texas. Morgan Stanley and Goldman are not going to Texas to support the Texi.
They're already in Texas, right. And they're adding more personnel, many of whom will be involved in market making, trading, and attracting new issues.
How are they going to attract new issues to list there?
Very simply, they're starting out with 9 companies. There's a public company called Energy Transfer. The CEO's name is Kelsey Warren, and he is the majority owner of the Texi.
Is that the MLP?
Yeah, well, I think it's former MLP, and they did a C-Corp conversion, or maybe they didn't. Richard Fisher is involved, former Dallas Fed president, former Texas Governor Rick Perry. And they have companies already listing, and what they said, Goldman and Bank of America are involved, BlackRock, Citadel, Schwab, Fortress, JP Morgan. They raised money for this thing, and they said that their listing standards will actually be stricter than the existing. They said there are 1,500 NASDAQ companies right now that would not qualify to list on the Texi, and 200 New York Stock Exchange companies. So they're actually going for regional, like they're looking for companies that are of the South and of Texas to start as primary listings. And then they're going to have thousands of stocks also trade there the way that you can buy New York Stock Exchange stocks on the NASDAQ and vice versa. So you will be able to trade any security you want there, and they're going to have companies that are primarily listed on the Texi. And I think it's notable. I don't know that it changes anything from an investing standpoint.
Who cares?
But it could change the business.
Don't care.
Don't like it.
No, you don't care.
You want to visit the Texi with me?
Dude, I love Texas.
Yeah.
I just don't care about this particular story.
Okay. We can move.
All right. Do you want to do the Q's things? I mean, this is sort of boring too.
Nope. Throw it out. Right. Let's do make the case and then mystery chart and we'll bounce. I've talked about this stock before. I like the technicals now for the first time. So I've always liked the fundamentals, but now I also like what I'm seeing in the chart.
It looks like Toast. I mean, all these software names look sort of similar. Yeah, it looks way better.
I'm so glad that you said that. What Toast and this company, ServiceTitan, have in common
is that
they are a hardware/software play, meaning this is not like enterprise SaaS where you could just turn it off and use an LLM. The devices themselves are part of what the company offers its customers, and it's endemic to what the users do to have both the hardware and the software. So obviously, in the case of Toast, it's point of sales. It's the kiosk at the front of the restaurant. It's whatever equipment is in the kitchen with screens.
Toast is working. Is Titan the business working?
Yeah, really well. And they're going to, I think, over the next 4 quarters, they'll have their first full year of GAAP profitability or on their way toward it. This is a $7 billion market cap tech company, but don't think of it as tech because it's focused entirely via its customer base on the old economy. This is construction.
Dude, I feel like this
plumbers,
is plumbers,
builders.
This has Texi written all over it.
It should list on the Texi. It's a very unique situation. It is the fastest growing software platform in its vertical. They are providing everything from appointment scheduling to billing services, et cetera. When you have somebody doing work at your house, they will often have the device in hand. And they're just eating share. They are well on their way to becoming the biggest market share of all these scattered different solutions that people in this industry have used. They're going to become the industry standard. So I wanted to show people this technical setup.
Looks, this is my type of bottom. I love it.
So that is the 200-day moving average challenge currently underway. And if it breaks, it is no longer in a downtrend. I wouldn't say it's breaking out, but this is the first sign of life. And you look at that consolidation period. They just could not push this stock meaningfully below 60.
I love it.
And now I think it wants higher. And look at the RSI at 65. Dude, confirming.
I think it's resting wants higher. Let me ask you a question. Which do you have more conviction in, this or toast? Because they look very similar.
It's the same story in a different industry, and they're both going to work. I think they're both Toast is much larger, more mature, already profitable, more customers, bigger market cap. This is a much smaller version, but in my view, just as sticky as the restaurant business. I don't think a lot of carpenters want to do a software overhaul every 6 months.
Okay.
I think once a business standardizes on ServiceTitan, that's it. That's what runs the business, and it's going to be tough to get them out of there.
Are you ready for the mystery chart, Mr. Brown? Let's do it. All right, here we go. John, if you please. All right, the orange line is a bank, and that bank is called JP Morgan. And JP Morgan has been the best performing bank across almost every time frame, except for this time frame and except for against this other bank. What's that purple line?
You show me these in percentages?
This is 3 years. What am I showing you?
Percentage return?
Yeah. JP Morgan's up 144% in the last 3 years. Not bad. The stock is up like 200.
I think it's Citi.
Bingo.
Oh man, I'm so good at this.
Isn't that wild?
I'm so hot. I had to take a shower after the show. You know what? It's wild and it's not. I did a segment on Citi on TV the other day.
Credit to Jim Labenthal. He was pitching this on TCAF with us.
That's right. That's true. Always happy for when Jimmy makes money. I did a segment on this on TV and if you look at this versus 2007, this stock is still in a 70% drawdown. Yeah. It's crazy, like how long it's been, and it's still like hugely off those old highs, thanks to all the dilution they had to do to stay alive. But Citi's on fire, and they shrunk to get bigger. Like they sold 25 businesses under Jane Fraser before she was even the CEO.
She really did it. And their wealth is killing. She was running
M&A for a Citi, and she was just selling everything she could, and they shrank to grow, and it worked. All right, that's it from us, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in to an all-new edition of What Are Your Thoughts? Thanks to everyone who joined us in the live chat. We miss you when we're not here. We'd love to see you. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. Big shout-out to Janice Henderson. Thank you for sponsoring the show. Remember, tomorrow's Wednesday, Animal Spirits with Michael and Ben. We'll have an all-new edition of Ask the Compound later on. And the Compound and Friends returns on Friday with a brand new guest, someone you have never seen on our show before. And I can't wait to introduce you to this person. Thanks again. Have a great night.
Ritholtz Wealth Management is a registered investment advisor. Advisory services are only offered to clients or prospective clients where Ritholtz Wealth Management and its representatives are properly licensed or exempt from licensure. Nothing on this podcast should be construed as and may not be used in connection with an offer to sell or solicitation of an offer to buy or hold an interest in any security or investment product. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. No advice may be rendered by Ritholtz Wealth Management unless a client service agreement is in place.